Coming soon to a computer store near you, if they're not there already, virtual pets, digital creatures that live on your computer screen. They have to be fed, entertained, and cleaned up after. The most complex virtual pets will even appear to learn. They'll also get sick and die. Though they are meant as entertainment, these computer creatures raise all sorts of questions about morality, values, and education. NPR's Margot Adler reports.
Even before last February, when it previewed at New York's Toy Fair, the news had been full of stories about a Japanese computer toy, the Tamagotchi. The Tamagotchi, which means lovable egg, is a computerized chicken-like creature that you can play with. It peeps when it needs attention, it makes a mess you have to clean up, and in the Japanese version, it dies. In the American version, the little creatures fly away and become angels. The company decided that Americans are less comfortable with death than the Japanese. More than 4 million Tamagotchis have been sold in Japan, and while the toy costs less than $20, it is so much in demand that some have sold for more than $400. So when a company called CyberLife in England said it had created creatures, virtual pets, that would make the Tamagotchi seem a primitive relic, it seemed worth taking a look. Toby Simpson, the product manager of CyberLife, walked into NPR's New York studio and turned on his computer.
Creatures is the ultimate in virtual pets, in that these things really are alive.
What do you mean they're alive?
Well, normally, the conventional approach to artificial intelligence and making things behave like real things is to try and capture the behaviours of real animals and then write program code so that you can make something look like something. The problem is, when you have something as complicated as a real life form, we don't understand how that works, so it's not possible to write all of the rules. So you have to have a different approach.
That approach was to model nature, something related to the discipline of artificial life, or A-life. If artificial intelligence seeks to simulate mental power, brain power, A-life seeks to create something that acts like a living thing. It draws from biology as much as computer science. Stephen Grand, the creator of creatures, decided to model the various building blocks of life, the DNA, the bloodstream, and so forth, then stick them all together and create little animals that would be born, would grow, reproduce, even get sick and die. The creatures, which are called Norns, hatch from eggs, and each one is different, although they all look like a cross between a dog, a cat, and a deer. They travel around a virtual world called Albia, which has pleasures and dangers. They can eat, play, breed, even talk.
Each of these creatures has its own digital DNA. And the DNA is quite important.
It looks like eggs. They're like eggs of different colors.
That's right.
They look like Easter eggs, actually.
Yeah, they do, actually, don't they? But they're not chocolate, I can assure you of that. Here we go. Here's our little baby boy. That's baby talk. We've got this thing, which is called the health kit, which allows us to have a look at his heartbeat, his temperature. He's actually running a bit of a fever for some reason. We'll have a look at that in a while.
There's also a science kit and a breeder's kit. After about 2 hours of existence, the creatures can reproduce. You can use the mouse as a hand to tickle the creatures, they seem to like that, or to spank them. Later, I bring my 6-year-old son to the office. He would love a pet of his own. We hatch a girl creature.
Don't spank it. Go this way. It's walking.
I find myself strangely anxious. The creature is hungry. You can see its vital signs getting a tiny bit weaker.
We need to get her food.
What kind of food do you think she'd like?
She likes cheese and honey. She definitely is learning how to say food. She's saying foo.
And you can teach the creature language.
You can see at the moment he's looking at the hand, which is me. I can teach him that the hand is called Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can teach the creature the name of all the objects like that, and also concepts such as push and pull and pick up and drop.
Can you do full sentences or not?
It's a simpler language to ours. It's sort of verb noun, so you can say eat lemon, and you can tell them to go and press something or to push something.
At one point, we hatch two creatures, a boy and a girl, and they start hitting each other. My son starts crying. He wants them to play nicely. I find myself troubled by the fact that the creatures only live, or whatever they do, for 10 hours. I ask Simpson, if they only exist for 10 hours, and people are getting attached to them, there's even a graveyard for them in the virtual world, how do people react? I keep thinking about their lifespan and how my son will react.
It is life. the creatures have such a smaller lifespan to all of us. And when you've started to give birth and you've moved them on and you've got the next generation, it's quite happy that you've managed to get creatures that are, say, 6 or 7 hours old to have given birth to 4 or 5 children who are themselves giving birth to children.
Do you feel bad that they die in 10 hours?
Yes.
Do you think they should live longer in this?
Yes. I would definitely say maybe 20 hours or even forever.
You'd rather have them live forever?
Yeah.
You think there'd be any problems if they live forever?
No.
Like there'd be, suppose you had so many babies and suddenly there were hundreds of people in the game. You think that would be good?
No.
No?
No. Well, I would say maybe at least 50 hours.
I think of all the responsibilities and the moral issues that are being put before my 6-year-old.
I can only think that probably does him good, don't you think?
That's Richard Dawkins, author of The Selfish Gene and professor at Oxford University.
I don't actually believe that these creatures are little conscious creatures. I think they're a very cunning illusion. But they do interact with human psychology in a remarkably personal way. And the power of the simulation, seems to me, comes from the great skill of the programmers in writing it to run on an ordinary desktop computer. This is the kind of simulation which I would expect to see running on a massive supercomputer or a parallel processing computer of some kind.
Although Dawkins is somewhat reassuring, there are other critics who are not. Clifford Stoll is an astronomer and a physicist and the author of the book Silicon Snake Oil. He tells me it might be better for my kid to go out and buy a goldfish.
Is our human condition so impoverished, so vapidly empty, that we have to turn to a computer for a pet? Is our interaction with each other so shallow that we no longer even have dogs and cats and even parakeets? Don't turn your kid on to a walk in the garden. No, turn your kid on to a virtual walk in an artificial garden on a computer screen.
Stoll's comments remind me that there is something I've found uncomfortable in the language Toby Simpson is using. He keeps referring to the creatures as alive.
We haven't written any program code to define their behaviors. All of that comes out of the fact that they are real living things. And it has been incredibly satisfying and amazing to be able to watch these creatures even show emotions as well.
Well, they act like living things.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not living things.
Well, if you ask 10 experts what the definition of a living thing is, you will get 10 answers. I saw one definition recently which was meant to be the best definition of life that exists, but someone pointed out that by that definition, both sand dunes and certain weather systems could be classed as alive. I guess my answer is something's alive if I'm prepared to believe it's alive. This microphone isn't alive because I'm not prepared to accept that, whereas you are, and a tree is. And these creatures act as though they're alive, and we haven't had to program their behaviours. There's no code that says, there we go, operate a teleporter and play around, eat some food. All of that behaviour is happening just out of how he feels. And all we've done is put in all these chemical reactions. He's got a bloodstream that's just full of hormones and chemicals, and that's what causes these behaviours. So from that point of view, he's as alive as any other living system.
It's odd to hear someone speak of a computer creation as having hormones and chemicals, not to mention feelings and emotions. This is not a carbon-based life form, after all. Richard Dawkins says it's not inappropriate to use metaphoric language when talking about such a program, to talk about bloodstreams and DNA. It's not saying they are alive like us. As for the claim that no one has programmed the creature's behaviors...
Well, that may be a slight exaggeration. I think it is true that there is something open-ended in the sense that these creatures do reproduce. They have a genetics. That means potentially they have an evolution. And it is possible that if people keep the simulation running for some years, that's to say rather many genetic generations, they may get some very interesting evolutionary changes which cannot at the moment be predicted.
As a matter of fact, there are people in England and throughout Europe who have changed the creature's structure, changed their span of existence. You could say these people have been playing God in a small way. John Staudenmeier is a professor of history of technology at the University of Detroit Mercy and the editor of the journal Technology and Culture. He notes that Simpson has been occasionally speaking in quasi-religious language.
I kept thinking as I was listening to this fellow describe this thing, because he's using a lot of hushed tones.
For historian Staudenmeier, this is nothing new. People have always wanted to control nature. There's a similarity here, he says, to the mechanistic tradition of automata of the ancient Greeks. Throughout Western history, he says, there has been the notion that you would achieve something dreadfully, even religiously important, if you could imitate life. The distance between human artifacts and the crazy, unpredictable munificence of life is large, he says, and there is a power in trying to bridge it, but you can't really.
And I wanted to say, this thing really works until you pull the plug, or until people run out of money, or until the electricity goes down because there's a generator burnout or something somewhere.
Staudenmeier tells a story about Henry Ford, how at the same time the auto industry was unpredictable and was giving Ford many problems, he created his own universe, Greenfield Village, a world on 90 acres with stores and houses, and most importantly, all under his control. Sometimes at night, Ford would walk around the village and survey his domain.
This is a very daring, this is a much better Greenfield Village on the computer screen, you might say, this virtual world of these little creatures. But the reason it is so powerful and attractive thing is because it's artificial. It is, after all, a life, artificial life, right? Or virtual life, the life. You maintain the fantasy of it being complete life. But you always know there is that switch there.
So I ask Richard Dawkins if one of the big differences between real life and something like creatures is that we can pull the switch. Dawkins says yes, for the moment.
I shouldn't bank on that in the distant future where robotic intelligence is concerned. It could be the case that in future a computer intelligence will be very difficult to switch off because it may surround itself with armed guards which are under its control.
Then, as in many a science fiction tale, it will not only be humans who want to play God. But for now, we have only those other problems that computer games and television and such raise, how to stay connected to the real world. Creatures will be released in July, bringing to you and your family all the moral conundrums that have confounded the great philosophers through the ages. I'm Margot Adler reporting.